Support for Around the House with Eric G is brought to you by Manscaped, who's the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology developments to provide you the best tools for your grooming experience. Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. We have an exclusive offer today for my listeners. 20% off plus free shipping with the code DIY at manscaped.com. Now, Manscaped hooked me up with a bunch of tools and formulations from their Perfect Package 3.0 kit. Manscaped has created the best hair trimmer ever, the Lawnmower 3.0. Their third-generation trimmer features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. In addition, this trimmer comes with an LED light for more precise shave and is waterproof to make your shower shave clean and easy. Now, of course, you don't use the same trimmer you use on your face. That's just nasty. The Lawnmower 3.0 comes inside their brand new Perfect Package 3.0, which comes with everything you need to keep trimmed, cut-free, and smelling nice down there. The Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0 also includes the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why not putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? And yeah, that stinks. Speaking of sweaty and stinky, I'm thankful for their Crop Reviver. This product, along with the Crop Preserver, keeps you from sweating, smelling, and sticking. Hey, it's that time of year, right? Manscaped threw in two free gifts into their Perfect Package. A pair of high-performance Manscaped boxer briefs that'll keep you feeling fresh all day, and a travel shed bag to store all of your grooming goodies. You gotta have a shed for the tools, right? So, keep yourself clean and trimmed up. Now, get 20% off free shipping with code DIY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com, and use code DIY. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. Now, finally, let's get to the show.
Everybody stop what you're doing, please.
When it comes to remodeling and renovating your home, there is no better show on your radio. This is Around the House with Eric G.
Where's the hammer?
From your back fence to the sidewalk, Eric will tell you how to keep it all in tip-top shape while helping you save a buck while doing it. If you like DIY projects, it takes a lot of practice to get good at it. And Eric is here to guide the way.
Is it on the, go up on the other floor. Somebody go up there and stop the hammering.
All that and more on the fastest 2 hours of home improvement radio.
These are the wrong plans. These are the old plans.
Oh. Welcome to
Stop It! Stop
Around the House with Eric G.
Welcome to Around the House with Eric G. This is where we talk home improvement every single week. Thanks for joining us. We've got a special guest today. My good friend, Caroline Blazowski, America's Healthy Home Expert. Welcome back to the show, my friend.
Hey. How are you?
Good.
What's going on?
You know, doing good. It's springtime now. Looking forward to just having some sunshine and enjoying the weather and getting outside a little bit. I've been stuck inside the house too much this year.
It's time to do that spring cleaning. That's it. That's my area of expertise, getting on that spring cleaning.
Quite frankly, I have seen so many people, including a few news organizations, that are doing it so wrong. And I wanted to talk about it because, I mean, I saw out there, and someone's going to get mad about this, and I don't care. I watched them giving mold advice, and they were sitting there talking about just use a bleach solution and wipe it down. And I'm like,
oh, no.
I'm screaming at the television going, I know better. Let's start talking about spring cleaning because this can be done so easily the right way and so easily the wrong way.
Yeah, well, bleach has definitely been a no-no. You know, even according to the EPA, I mean, you can go right on the EPA website. And so bleach has not been the recommended choice to dealing with mold for a long time. And one of the reasons is that there was a study a while back. I mean, this is going like years and years and years, where they did cleanup with bleach in a school. And so when the bleach combined with the mycotoxin that the mold were producing, it made everybody really sick in the building. So it's really important, obviously, if you've only got, I usually say 10 square feet. If you're smaller than 10 square feet, you can do it yourself. You can use some hydrogen peroxide. You can actually go down to like local hardware store, pick up some Concrobium. That's, it's like a citrus-based antimicrobial, safe to use. You can do it yourself. If you get over 10 square feet, then you want to look at hiring a professional and having somebody come out, because you probably have a more significant problem and you probably have to start controlling your humidity and then also do some remediation, which you and I both had an experience with a Oregon job that thank God I could bring Eric on.
That was a lot of fun. You literally just texted and went, "Hey, you got a minute?" Yeah, and jumped on a phone call, and it was awesome talking to somebody that's 20 minutes from my house and talking about their story.
Yeah, I had a client in Oregon, and they had done some, obviously, indoor air testing, and they weren't feeling the greatest. Nothing terrible, but they just thought something might be up, and they had a lot of cats. So, you know, we just were like, well, the house looks really clean. Nothing was wrong. And I happened to see this hatch that had a, you know, it was a lift in the closet where you could lift up the hatch and look down into the crawl space that was under the house. And the house was only like 5 years old.
Yeah.
And so I decided to take a sample, and the sample came back off the charts for all kinds of mold. And so I called Eric, because when we looked at the insulation, it wasn't something we had typically seen. So I'm out in the Northeast by New York, and they use a different type of insulation out in Oregon, and I'll let you explain that. But anyway, the insulation had turned this blackish color, but also was a light brown color, which was deceiving, but they had a massive mold problem. And so we needed to call Eric to kind of just find out what was happening with the insulation.
Yeah, in our area, you know, we get different manufacturers, or they're coming out of a different plant, so sometimes they'll have a different color insulation. And then, of course, you stack on top of it that insulation just had to, and especially by a hatch to a crawl space or any place where there's air infiltration, as you know, it becomes the biggest air filter known to mankind. So depending what's down there, that grabs every piece of dirt, mold, moisture, anything else as it goes through that, you know, 6 or 8 inches of quote unquote filter and grabs everything. And so then you've got a strange insulation color mixed with whatever else was down in that crawl space, and now you got a problem.
And we're usually used to, I mean, this insulation was, we think, was white at some point,
yeah,
but it had turned this like nasty, like kind of beige and then black and brown color, which kind of threw us because we didn't know what it was. We were like, is that fiberglass? Is it not fiberglass? Is it some kind of rock wool? Because normally here, I mean, typically in the Northeast, you'll see either pink or you'll see yellow insulation. And then of course, Johns Manville makes the white. But this was such an odd color, we couldn't even tell if it was fiberglass at first. So Eric,
well, Rockwell has
being
that,
the genius.
Yeah. Thanks.
The genius you are.
Well, Rockwell has that, you know, it has that kind of olive green tint to it. This looked like you had taken the olive green tint out of that and just left kind of that khaki taupe-ish color, and then threw every kind of dark gray and black at it. So it was pretty interesting. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it was pretty funky. But hopefully Eric was nice enough to recommend some remediation companies out in her space. So we were able to hook her up, and hopefully she'll be on the mend. I'm sure we'll be able to do a follow-up and make sure everything's okay. But that crawl space got really nasty. And the house was only 5 years old. So you're not talking about an old house at all. And unfortunately, you really have to keep an eye on your crawl spaces and make sure, you know, you don't go down there, you don't look at it, and stuff can easily happen. And in this case, she condensated with, you know, she had some outside vents, and then the moisture came in, and obviously it just took to that insulation and started to form all kinds of mold, wanted to form there for sure.
It had its layer of funk down there, that's for sure. Speaking of that, I shared with you what I shared up on Around the House with Eric G this last time about a week ago. It was a story called "The Dark Side of Housing Homeless Vets in Portland" that was done by one of our local TV stations, but I'll be honest, I had not seen an exposed ceiling where they took down drywall that had that much mold in it that looked like it had been a gutted house fire and somebody had closed it back up again. That was one of the worst videos I'd seen in a long time of a place people were actually inhabiting that had that bad of mold infestation within it.
I need to take you out on my jobs then.
I know. See, I try not to get into those. I mean, I've been in those, but all the places that I had been in, they were uninhabited. You know, they had been abandoned or not lived in for a decade or something like that. I know you see a lot more of it than I do by all means, but man, it's amazing what can be hiding behind that drywall sometimes.
Oh, it is. And, you know, you can look at, I mean, look at the house that we're just talking about. I mean, it was perfectly immaculate. It didn't have any issues. And it was just in a space that nobody was looking at.
Yeah.
So, and that happens behind walls. You can have a flood, you know, especially now with the real estate market being so hot, people are jumping to buy homes without proper inspection. And, you know, they're paying over asking price, especially in, you know, areas outside of big metropolitan areas. They're going out to the suburbs. And so, you know, we see it. We're seeing a lot of it where the inspectors are kind of like not doing their due diligence and the customers aren't really asking for it because they don't want to lose a contract on the house because there's five bids and all these people want it. So everybody's kind of overlooking these issues, but, you know, they're having mold issues, they're having septic issues, they're having, you know, all kinds of like chimney flashing and then making sure the chimney, you know, a lot of the chimneys need to be repointed. I mean, there's a lot of damage that's happening and people are just overlooking it because they want a place and they're not realizing the expense on it. For
foundation
sure.
issues, water in the basement issues. I mean, it's out there. I mean, it is so volatile in my, even in my neighborhood where I live is that, and you and I have talked about it, but, and I've talked about it on the radio, I have a flag lot with a house behind mine. And long story short, on the other side of the driveway that goes past my house, and I've got a decent sized lot. It's a half acre, but on the other side of that driveway, there's a fence, and they tore down that house. For, I think it was about a $450,000 house that they tore down last, you know, 4th of July-ish of last year. And they're building a house on it. They started on Labor Day. They poured concrete on Labor Day and got that knocked out and started going. Well, they're finishing the house up, but they took it off the market in, like, January and realized that because the housing prices were going up so much that they were going to pull it off the market until it's done. Well, now it's done. And they're just, you know, there's some landscaping stuff. They're just kind of getting that last spit and polish on it. But it raised, it was going to go up for 1.5. Then they had it teased at 1.6. It has gone up each month, $100,000. And I think it's on the market this week for 1.99. And it was 1.5 in February. So it's crazy. And so, yeah, and you and I are both seeing that out there that, hey, I'm going to put an offer in the house. I'm going to go $60,000 over asking price, but they want me to waive every single inspection. And it's just a really, really, really bad idea.
Oh, and you know, we talked about this because I was looking for a house as well. And that was the contingency. You know, we wanted to go in and we wanted to do inspections. And then the person who came in said, oh, well, I'll just buy it over list and we don't want to do inspections. So obviously, why would they want to sell it to us? You know, so it was frustrating as being a purchaser and trying to get the house because, you know, obviously, you know, I'm not going to buy a house without doing a water inspection, a mold inspection. Those are keys. And I would tell any of my clients the same thing. Do not buy a property without mold, without water tests. Because when you get in and you have the problem, it's going to be an expensive fix on the back end. And water, sometimes you can't fix it. You know, if you have contaminated water, you end up with a pretty big problem. So you got to do mold tests. You have to do a water test. And even if you really want the house, I mean, it's, you know, don't make that mistake. It's not worth it.
Yeah, I ran into a house that that I knew somebody that was trying to buy, and it was on a well. And they're like, oh, it's out in the country. It's got a well. It's great. It's don't have to worry about the water. Came up that there was radon in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And people go, oh, well that's actually not a big deal. That's a big deal if you're taking a shower, a steamy shower in it. That's for sure.
Well, what actually happens with that, it's not, the radon really isn't in the water per se. It follows the pipe up. So mm-hmm. We take water samples for radon in the water, but logistically, I believe it's that it follows, you know, it's able to come out as a gas. So yeah. It follows up the pipe. But when you turn on your shower, you can have really high concentrations that come out because that's where it finds its way in and out. And I've had clients who had really high radon levels because of they were breathing it in and showering in a bathroom that had it. So yeah, it's kind of interesting. And so when we do a test, like when I do a water test and we're doing radiologicals, we'll take a look at it. You know, we'll say, okay, we're going to do your gross alpha and beta. We'll do your uranium and then we'll do a radon test out of the water just to see like if there's anything under the ground that's being missed, you know, it's not coming up through or getting removed through your traditional radon system.
Yeah. And then I've seen people around here that I was talking to somebody that was just bought a house and they decided to do their own system for radon. They did a DIY radon thing because They couldn't even get somebody out there to test it. And they just said, well, we knew the neighbors on either side did it. So they did a DIY radon system installation themselves. And I'm just shaking my head going, oh, there's got to be a better way to do this, people, because I just don't want to see people thinking they're doing this as a DIY project and missing all the proper steps. And they're not really taking care of the problem. So I love doing DIY, but there's some things that I think you need to bring the professional in to make sure it's being done correctly.
Definitely. But there is something good with radon. Like, I do recommend that people go down to Home Depot or Lowe's, and you can do like what I call ProLab has a two canister test, and you want to make sure you're doing the two canister one, not the one. And you definitely should do a radon test, especially if you've done any kind of remodeling, new windows, vinyl siding, anything, you know, any kind of construction to the building that changes the building envelope, because it's really easy for radon to switch. Like, you'll go in, you'll buy the house, and you're below 4 picocuries and everything's fine. And then you add new windows, you add additional, maybe house wrap, maybe you added, you know, siding. And then all of a sudden your radon level, you know, 16. And people go, well, you know, it was fine when I moved in. I'm like, well, have you done any changes to the house? Have you remodeled? And they say, yes. I said, well, we always have to check radon. And it's not unheard of for it to happen. It happens all the time because you tighten that building envelope. And so then all of a sudden a 4 that was able to escape out is now all of a sudden 16 in the building. So really important. And you can do that yourself. That's like a great test to just go grab a 2-canister test, put it in the lowest level of the home and run a radon, you know, especially if you've done changes.
And the other thing too is if you've had earthquake activity in your area, you know, sometimes here, we'll have those little 3.0s all the time around here in the Portland metro area. One day we're going to have the 7 or the 9 or the 10. I mean, it's going to happen. It's happened here before. It's going to happen again. You know, it's the big Cascadia quake we talk about out here. But you think about earthquakes, that anytime we have seismic activity, we're moving that ground to ground, and all of a sudden that crack in the earth beneath the house that you can't see could have moved around or opened up. And every time we have that, I just recommend people to go out and have that test just to make sure that all of a sudden they were good 6 months ago, but now all of a sudden they've got radon coming up to the soil because things moved around just enough to open that up again.
You know what? I just had this client. It was in Arizona, and this was such an interesting story. So they had this musty smell. Now they were on a slab, and it's, you know, Arizona's really dry, and they were getting this musty smell. And it was like completely throwing me, because I'm like, this is like so weird, because it's traditionally very dry and they don't typically get problems. And if they do get them, they're usually in the HVAC up in the attic. So because, you know, obviously the air conditioning's running and you get condensation. So we had somebody go up. I hired a NADCA certified duck guy. I had to find somebody out there to go to my client's house. And so they went up, and he's like, Caroline, everything looks like fabulous. He's like, there's nothing wrong. You know, I don't see anything traumatic. I'm like, that's so weird. I'm like, where is this must, you know, smell coming from? So we did sampling, and I definitely got high levels. And for the life of us, like, we couldn't figure it out. And so we were looking at the building structure. And so finally they were going to replace their flooring anyway. And I said, it's got to be coming from under the floor. Like, it just, I mean, there were no other possible sources where the mold could be potentially coming from. Mm-hmm. So she called me, and she just like wrote to me, and she said, we took up all of the carpet and they finally took up the tile. They had cracks, Eric, like you're talking about, in the foundation. Mm-hmm. So they had all these, like, you know, fairly large cracks that had occurred, probably just like you're saying, from either the ground shifting or from water. You know, in Arizona, they'll get seasons of rain, right? So, and maybe it was just enough that it was, you know, causing some movement, settling cracks, whatever, but they had it. And sure enough, all the mold, like this musty smell, was coming up. So we had to cement the entire floor, you know, trying to put a coat, skim coat over it and seal up all the cracks. And then the musty smell went away. But it was really wild because you don't anticipate that being a problem. Like, you would never think, oh, in Arizona being so dry that there would be a problem. And it was out by Scottsdale. So, you know, it wasn't like they get a lot of rain. And so, but you can get mold anywhere. So it shows you that, you know, changes in ground activity or even just settling cracks can cause all kinds of stuff to come up, not just radon, but mold as well.
You know, that musty smell, I think, is probably the hardest thing to track down in a house. It is so tough to figure out what that light musty smell is. I have done more chasing things in circles trying to figure out how to combat that than probably anything else in a home, you know, over electrical problems, over anything else. That seems to be one of the hardest ones to track down. And especially on a house where traditionally they don't have a crawl space, they're slab on grade, they've got that concrete slab. All it takes is, you know, a toilet seal to be leaking, and all of a sudden that's leaking down in there. And if there's a crack, even in the other bathroom, that can leak in and be coming up over there. So good call.
Yeah, and this seemed to be coming from the ground. Like, you know, it seemed that the cracks had opened up, you know, from whatever chipping that occurred, and then it was damp. So they would get seasons where it would kind of pool in the backyard because mm-hmm. they're, you know, when it did rain pretty heavily, they just didn't have the drainage.
Sure.
So it would kind of pool back there. And I think that it pooled under that slab, you know, or the concentration of water under there was pretty extensive. So it probably formed some mold and or just dankness. And it was just coming up. But I have to say, we got rid of it. And we did, you know, we sealed up all the cracks and did it. And she said the smell is completely gone now. So I was so happy. I was like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's an awesome win right there. That's an awesome win. Well, let's get back to cleaning a little bit here. You know, when you're talking about cleaning around the house, and, you know, I always tell people one of the first things I like to do in the springtime, especially in my area where we have really kind of damp, humid winters, is to go on that search for mold, look around the drapes, look in the back of the coat closets and the closets in the bedrooms, just do a good search for mold and mildew around there. I think it's one of the easiest things you can do to try to combat some of those health problems that kind of pop up again in the springtime when things get warmer and even more moist.
Well, definitely, because that's going to activate, right? So one, making sure you're controlling your humidity all year round, especially out where you are. I mean, you've got to keep that relative humidity between 30 and 55%. So I don't care if you get a whole house dehumidification system, you know, especially if you don't have a crawl space or if you don't have a basement where you do a standalone unit or a crawl space dehumidifier. But putting one in a whole house dehu is excellent. And, you know, we always talk about Thermastor makes a good one, the Ultra Air. You can put it in, and then that will allow you some ventilation too. So if you can connect it to an outside, you know, to outside air, you can bring about 100 CFM of fresh air in, which is always good for makeup air. So okay. I like that, you know, making sure you're controlling your humidity, especially as you go into the season. Now we're going to start to see high relative humidity, and that contributes not only to mold, because we always talk about mold with it, but dust mites. You cannot have dust mites unless your relative humidity gets over 55%. It is a prerequisite. They have to have the moisture. So if you can keep your RH down, you're not going to have as many allergies just from indoor air sources like dust mites. So it's very important. Know your relative humidity and know what it is, and then be able to keep it between that range that I'm telling you.
Super smart, super smart. Because yeah, it's shocking how much that humidity can really change stuff. I mean, my last house that I was living in before we moved into this one, you know, we had one there that we were in for a little bit that was a rental, and the landlord just didn't want to deal with the humidity issues. And if you got down in the crawl space, the crawl space was, you know, technically up to building code in that it was a 15-year-old house, and they had laid down the thick black, you know, vapor barrier that was overlapped 24 inches. But when I would crawl across it to go do any inspections down there, your knees and your hands were sinking into the mud below it. It was like you were just going through a mud pit that somebody put plastic over. And so,
That's horrible. And that's worse. And then you got, you know, moisture trapped under a plastic vapor barrier that's not getting air. And that starts to stink. It starts to stink really bad.
Oh yeah. And he had put down hardwood floors in the house, and we were having, you know, expansion contraction issues with the hardwood floors because, I don't know where he got this hardwood floor from, but it was some weird wood out of Southeast Asia that I hadn't seen before. And it was doing these weird moving things where, you know, when we moved out, I noticed that I moved out of my office, which was kind of in the area where it was the most moist down in that crawl space where the low point drain was. You would sit there, and I mean, there was a 3/8 inch gap where the flooring had just moved around, and it was just like, oh man, this is so horrible. So horrible, you know, but you don't know what's going down in that crawl space. And if you're not able to get down there with a crawl space type home, I always say find your favorite, you know, find your favorite crawl space company and just have them go down there twice a year at least and do some inspections and make sure things are good. And if you're not able to get down there or it's too scary to get down there, have a professional go do it, because
It's the scare. It is the scary thing. I think people think if they don't look at it, then it's just not. It's not going to be a problem. So
I gotta get down to mine again. Yeah, I gotta get down to mine again. And I'm not scared. I've been in thousands of crawl spaces over the years. I'm not worried about it. But I just gotta move stuff. My access is in the bottom of the hall closet in the very back under the staircase. So it is like we gotta clear all the storage stuff out of there. And then the worst part is it's up against the bottom of the staircase. So there's not. Kind of always have to. It's you can't stand up and jump into it. You kind of have to crawl in there and slide down into it because there's not 24 inches of space above it to get into the crawl space access. So that might end up getting changed in the near future.
It's crazy that they even build things like this. Like you can't. I mean, it's like I could say, okay, well, at least be able to get down in it. But half of these crawl spaces and things that I've seen, you can't even access it. Like, we can't get in there to put a dehumidifier, and we literally can't get in there to have a remediation crew in there. So, I mean, I've seen this over and over, and I'm like, what are we doing, people? Like, we need to be able to access it. Or sometimes it'll be down in the center of the kitchen, mm-hmm. so you'll have to, like, go down through the center of the kitchen, and there's no ladder, and then we have to try to get down there, and it's not even convenient to anybody fitting in there. So.
Oh yeah, I've had ones where I've went out to go look at crawl spaces and with an issue, and it's like this 24 inch wide by 18 inch high opening on the side of the foundation, and I'm like, that's hard to get into and to be able to navigate in and get around stuff that's inside. And of course there's that sewer pipe running right across in front of it that gets in the way too. So it's some of those just get crazy. And I wish that, I've done dig out projects with contractors before too, where homeowners looked at it and said, you know, I need to better condition the space down here, so I'm not sending all this stuff up in there. And we've done dig outs down there where we've taken, you know, 8 or 10 inches of soil out and make it so it's a legitimate crawl space so it can be serviced. And that's its own big project.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a crazy world, but definitely check out those attics, check out those crawl spaces. A lot of people have air conditioning and HVAC up in the attic, so you want to go up. And during the spring, it's a great time when you're getting those really like just downpouring rainstorms, you know, either a thunderstorm comes in, rolls in, go up in the attic at that time and take a look. Because people often go up and they say, oh, everything looks great. And they go up when it's dry. But you want to go up when it's really wet so you can see if you're getting anything that's, you know, beating up, coming in on your chimneys, fireplaces, all of that. If it's not properly sealed, you'll get water infiltration that can come in and it'll just beat off your chimney in the interior of the space. And then it'll hit a beam and it'll just end up like following that beam all the way to the other side of the house. And you'll end up with a leak and you'll just never know it because you were never up there when it was, you know, actually raining and wet to see what kind of condensation and just, you know, water infiltration you're getting. So go up in a bad storm in the spring, sit up there, have a cup of coffee, do whatever, and just take a look. You know, and chimneys, they need to really be sealed this time of year. Like if you've got any kind of block, you know, you've got a chimney, you've got fireplaces, all of that block really needs to be sealed. And like I do mine with like a water-based sealer and just, you know, you got to seal that block because otherwise you're going to get porous, you know, if it keeps getting wet and wet and wet, it'll just absorb right in.
Well, and it's a good time right now too to go have your heating and cooling system maintained, have the professionals come out, do their annual service or semi-annual service on it, make sure that, you know, I've seen more problems in the attic when you've got your heating and cooling system up there that maybe that you know, right where the condensation comes down, sometimes I'll have that condensation pump and it's been sitting there not working. Make sure that you've got that system dialed in and maintained so you don't have those leaks up there, because once that condensation line gets plugged up, starts leaking and it gets down into the ceiling and insulation, you can have a heck of a problem. And the chance of you maybe not catching that is good too.
Yeah, no, really good. You know, make sure all HVAC, and if you live in zones like temperate zones, like Texas, Florida, where you have four seasons of hot air and hot weather, you need to have your HVAC serviced more than once a year. People just think, oh, I'll just service it once a year. No way. You need to have it serviced 2-3 times. If you're in zones where you're constantly running air conditioning, 2-3 times a year, it needs to be serviced because you have to make sure your drip pan's good, that you don't have, you know, any condensation that's happening, you know, off your coil that's, you know, not warranted, that you don't want, making sure everything's going down in the pan and it's not, you know, overflowing with calcium deposit, because you will get mineral deposits and stuff that back up from your air conditioning, and sometimes that drainage will just get plugged. So, you know, especially if you're in warmer climates, you got it at least twice a year, if not, you know, three.
No question. No question. And that's just one of those things that it's smart because you're going to have them out there sooner or later. If you don't maintain it, they're going to be out there fixing something. And you might as well save yourself money getting that caught up first, you know, and maintained versus having to pay the big bucks to replace stuff and then have to do the mold cleanup. You know, one thing that I've seen, too, that I'm shocked about across the country, and I'm seeing this more and more with social media, how many people that don't have to have bathroom and kitchen ventilation as well.
Oh, I know. That's terrible. My dad doesn't have it. He's in Delaware. I cannot believe he does not have a kitchen vent fan.
It's crazy, isn't it? I mean, it's...
And he doesn't even have one, Eric, where you can install it, because the way he has it, I think it's on the inside wall. So he doesn't even have access. It's like a dummy wall. I don't even know how to explain it, but he can't, there's no way to even put anything in there the way it's constructed. So he can't even like put a fan in.
Yeah, I've seen a couple things. One where they say, well, you have a window, so you don't have to put that in the bathroom, which is always a horrible idea. The other one that I've seen is that they're not, even with the gas range, that they're letting them put in the recirculating vent hoods, which that's still in many states. That's shocking to me, especially on the East Coast. And then the other one that shocks me too is that in some municipalities, that they will let you use that for all your bathroom fans, that super cheap white vinyl flexible duct hose to run that out to the outside. And it doesn't work in my area, but I mean, in my area, I have to have it a metal duct so it can be cleaned and it needs to be insulated so you don't get too much condensation in it. And I see people putting in that, literally that $5 duct, you know, that flexible vinyl ducting to go outside. And it's like, are you kidding me? There's no way you can ever clean it. There's no way you can ever maintain it. And we got to get some states that are doing a little bit more on ventilation, because there are so many out there that are 40 years behind schedule on what they should be doing.
No, I know. And that flex duct, you know, any kind of flexible duct like that, even using it in HVAC, which, you know, it happens all the time now, it's just, you can't clean it. You know, we went from using like real metal ductwork and having it insulated on the exterior to using this flex duct, and then also using insulated duct on the interior, which is a huge problem for HVAC. So when we come in there, we see a lot of systems that have insulated on the interior of the duct, which is bad. So think about it. If you have insulation in there, what happens? Everything gets trapped in it. It gets nasty. It gets funky. Sometimes it's like open, just like fiberglass insulation. Sometimes it's actually like a sealed, you know, a sealed material. But either way, it just traps everything, dust, debris, sheetrock dust, mold, and it starts growing. And we have so many clients who have super, super bad allergies, and they don't even know. They just say, every time I turn on my HVAC, I don't feel well. And they think, oh, is it just the air conditioning? And then we get in there and we put a camera up inside your HVAC and take a look. And then we see, oh my gosh, you've got all this debris in there that's stuck to the insulation that's on the interior of your duct. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Oh yeah. Yeah. What do you think about cleaning HVAC systems as far as duct cleaning and stuff? I know there's always multiple sources out there that say, oh, you shouldn't. Oh, you should. What's your thought on that?
It's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, I think everybody should have their ducts cleaned like at least every three years or so. And it really makes a huge difference, because you get all kinds of, I mean, everything from your hydrocarbons that can settle in there. So like when you cook it, you know, in general, when you cook in your house and you say you grill a lot, grilling, or you decide you have a fireplace or you run smoke, you get these hydrocarbons that kind of form all over things, and they adhere to it. And the only way to really get them out is to clean. So it's important, like people even doing carpet cleaning, like we found that people who do like a really, you know, a deep steam, like a steam clean with a HEPA, they get so much improvement in indoor air quality because of the fact that you're getting these hydrocarbons removed. Because otherwise it just sits in your stuff, you know, and it sits in the ducts. And it's the same thing with duct work, right? It just traps everything from dander to dust mites. I had a situation where I had bought a house and they had cats previously. Oh. And I went in and, I mean, I scoured it, scoured. I mean, the house was like immaculate. And my mom walked in and she has a very bad cat allergy.
I do too, so I get it.
She starts sneezing and I'm like, what? I'm like, I have you sneezing in here. I've cleaned everything. It's been cleaned. Da, da, da. We were running filtration. And she says, there's a cat in here. I'm like, no. I'm like, and Eric, there was like nothing left. And then it just dawned on me. I'm like, it's in the ducks. And sure enough, I had a NADCA certified duck cleaning company that I recommend. They're fantastic. Always get NADCA certified. They're the best. And so they came out, did the ducks, and she was perfectly fine. Yep. So it just shows you that, you know, even me, you know, I can be fooled too. But it was, the cat had just settled in there, and it was enough to give her, you know, a sensitivity to it. So it's important. Absolutely. I think everybody, you know, especially if you have high traffic, if you've got cats and birds and dogs and all kinds of stuff, then you got to do it more frequently, maybe every year.
Yeah, we have two dogs, and I removed every piece of carpet out of the house. There is no wall-to-wall carpeting the house. We went with, you know, hardwood or luxury vinyl plank in the house because I just didn't want to have to deal with that. And make it easy. Now, there's a lot of great carpets out there. I'm not saying don't put carpets in your house. But for us and our lifestyle, I wanted to really do a hard surface in there. And what I like about it is that, you know, on my first floor, I've got that robotic vacuum cleaner that's got a 7-stage HEPA filter in it. And I can run that thing twice a day. And we really keep the pet hair and the dust down that way.
No, it's really important. And you're talking about hard surfaces. You really have to, when you're picking flooring in general, you want to pick it according to your lifestyle. And that was like the greatest thing that you just said, because not everybody has the same lifestyle. And so people often ask me, they're like, well, are you anti-carpet because, you know, you work with allergies and healthy home? And I'm like, no, absolutely not. Like older people over the age of 65 who are fall risks, and I deal a lot with clients who, you know, get older and we need to keep their environment safe. That's an issue. Like you can't have a tile floor with someone who is potentially, you know, a slip and fall risk.
Yeah.
So they could really get hurt. So in those cases, it's, you know, it's much better to have carpeting. And then you take the steps, you know, you try not to wear shoes in the house. You make sure you get a really good vacuum and you have to vacuum frequently. So, you know, you can do things to counteract it, but you have to pick these things according to your environment, like, and according to your need, right? And make your environment according to your need. But I like to work out. And I don't like working out on a hard surface. So for me, I would want to have a room that has carpet, you know, just because, you know, bouncing around on a cement floor or a hard floor is not enjoyable. So,
yeah,
you know, according to your need, right? And then you make the changes so that you can, you know, I obviously have expensive vacuums and I make sure I use immediately and we don't wear shoes in the house and all that kind of good stuff. So, you know, we keep it the best we can.
No question. And that's such a great point is that, you know, that you've got to deal every situation differently. There is no one size fits all answer,
exactly.
But nonetheless, with all of it, you got to keep it all clean because that clean is what keeps things, you know, and I'm not talking about going to the store and getting, you and I talk about this a lot, but go getting the wipes in the
Lysol.
Canister, the Lysol or name the brand, you know, whatever they are, brand of disinfectant wipes that you see open in every single office complex, doctor's office, when you walk in, you know, shopping cart, I don't care where they're at, they're everywhere, but those aren't good for you either.
Nope. And they, you know, anything like clean doesn't mean spreading chemicals around. That's the opposite of clean. That's just more chemicals. So you want to wipe surfaces down from bacteria and you want to make sure you're removing particulate and contaminants. But you don't want to be making yourself sick in the process. So you don't want to be adding things that have tons of chemicals. You can use things like hydrogen peroxide. You can use things like soap and water, which is just your basic surfactant and water, which works great.
Yeah.
You know, we minimize the usefulness of just a damp rag at removing contaminants too. You know, dusting with a damp rag is always good.
Oh, yeah. And then, by the way, people out there, here's another great tip. Just because it's an air freshener doesn't mean it actually cleans things. It's probably making things worse for you and your air quality.
Definitely. They have more chemicals in air fresheners than you could ever imagine. And some of them are carcinogenic, so they're not a healthy thing. So any more than 15 minutes of fragrance a day is a no-no in my book. So if I allow you 15 minutes of some kind of fragrance if you really must do it. But if not, it's much healthier if you don't.
Those plug-in style air fresheners where they've got the wick or whatever on them, you're doing is vaping, guys. You're just vaping that yellow, orange, green, blue junk. So why put it in your house when you don't need it?
That's right.
You know, you and I had an interesting conversation as well. It's just about taking things like that, you know, including some of these, you know, essential oils and stuff like that that people do. that can create its own health issue as well that you got to really be careful with in your house, because you're putting a lot of stuff directly into your lungs that isn't meant to be there.
Well, also, you know, they talked about, remember when it was the whole vaping crisis and people's lungs were shutting down. And it was because when they were taking, I think they had like vitamin E oil in the vape, right? So when you heated it, or when something gets heated, it changes the consistency of things. You know, things can be a liquid, solid, or gas. And so when you heat some of these essential oils in particular that start out as a liquid, they become very, very small vapor and they get into your lungs. And then all of a sudden when they cool off and they're no longer heated, they solidify. And so that's what coats your lungs and can create things like pneumonia and you know, other health issues, breathing issues. But they can stay in there. They can actually, some of them are small enough to actually shut down your kidneys and shut down your liver. So it's really important, like when you heat something up, even like an essential oil, when you put it in like a diffuser or something, it can really make you sick. So you want to be careful. You don't really want to change the consistency of things a lot. Like you don't want to heat something or you don't want to cool it and then, you know, allow it to become a different state where it can get into your lungs.
Hey, man, that is stuff that we just got to be careful with. And with all the problems we've had in the last year and a half, that's the last thing we want to do is do more damage to our lungs in the process.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, before we run out of time here, Caroline, what else are some good tips here for kind of spring cleaning? Because I know right now so many people are going through and maybe decluttering, cleaning up, they're putting stuff away, they're maybe getting rid of some stuff inside the house or looking to get outside. But I know my allergies always get crazy this time of year. One, because I'm stirring up dust. Two, because we've got all those outdoor air quality issues with the pollens that I'm allergic to. What other tips do you got really for helping people out in that situation?
So we can do like five fast tips, right? So
there we go.
First tip is make sure that you vacuum per week as many people as in the house, and pets count as people too. So for example, if you have two people living in the house and one pet, you really should be vacuuming three times a week to get the dander and dust and all of that stuff up that we shed and leave behind. So that's something to aspire to. So as many people in the house and pets as you have, that's how many times a week you need to vacuum. The next thing is make sure that you are servicing your HVAC, which we talked about. Make sure those filters are changed and that you have somebody look at your air conditioner. And if you live in a zone where you're running air conditioning more than a quarter of the season, season of the year, make sure that you're changing that and having that serviced, you know, twice to three times a year. And then what else is really good? So decluttering is the big thing. If you haven't used something in 5 years, make sure you get rid of it. So Amen. People like to hold on to stuff and they say, oh, you know, well, I'll use it when, or maybe I'll use it in this circumstance. But really, if you haven't used something in 5 years, chances are you probably won't use it. So if you, you know, are looking for things to remove and you can't clean around clutter, so you're going to have to, you know, remove some stuff to be able to get to the dust and the dust mites and the mold and all the things that love it when you put these things in your space, right?
Right.
So decluttering helps you clean better. So if you haven't used it in 5 years, you know, let it go. And then this window screens are a huge one. Make sure, you know, the time of year you're going to be opening your windows. So make sure that you wipe the screens down because the screens get really gnarly and dirty. So if you ever run like a damp paper towel over a screen, it'll turn black. So you want to clean that all off. So when you're pulling air in, you're not pulling in all kinds of particulate and also pollution. So make sure your screens are super clean.
That's a great tip because that ends up being its own little filter in a way.
Uh-huh, absolutely. And so then you open it up and you're like, oh, fresh air. And I'm like, no, not really.
Psych. That is great, Caroline. So you do a lot of consulting work out there as well. You help people like our friend here, not far from me, trying to deal with their mold and health issues that they had within their house. If someone was going to hire you or even get some of your testing equipment, where's the best place for them to go?
So healthyhomeexpert.com. And you can visit us on social media. You can visit us on Facebook or just visit the old website, which nobody ever talks about that anymore, right? It's like the website became, but you can visit us at our website. We do all kinds of testing services. We can test anything in your home. Water testing is great to do this time of year too. Everybody should do a water test and find out, hey, what do I have? And just because you're on city water or you have treated water, that doesn't mean that it's safe. You can still have all kinds of things like lead and copper and haloacidic acids and trihaliomethanes and all of these things from chlorination breakdown, which are carcinogenic. So it's important to test your water. But we do all that. Anything pertaining to the home, we can test it, and we offer great technologies to help you fix it. So
you got it.
Hopefully we can help you out.
Oh, you always can. You always can. Caroline, thanks for coming on today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Eric. See you soon.
Special thanks to Carolyn Buzowski, America's Healthy Home Expert, for taking the time away from her busy schedule and coming on the show today. Now, we didn't fit all of it into the show. There's a lot more we talked about, and you can catch that anywhere you catch podcasts or Around the House online. Just look Around the House with Eric G, and you'll find it. More after these important messages.